In the end, abdominal adiposity is like in humans, when it's too much adiposity, and if you don't treat the animal well, if the animal is stressed and then the animal starts to do lipolysis, of course the fat is inflamed, severely inflamed, the animal starts to develop metritis, mastitis, and related with other metabolic diseases, ketosis, fatty liver. But in the end, we have some genetic component that I think is important to take into account.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Adasail, provider of Smartamine M, the best-in-class rumen-protected methionine product for dairy producers who want to optimize milk production. Kemen invites you to optimize your herd's performance. Dive in at kemen.com/dairy. Virdus Nutrition, the fatty acid people. Priority IAC, the only company bringing the fields of microbiology and nutrition together. Zinpro Isoferm is the nutrient your herd needs. Fuel the rumen first and unlock dairy herd productivity and greater profitability.
So hello, everyone. This is Luis Ferreira with the Dairy Nutrition Black Belt podcast. And today we'll have a discussion about abdominal adiposity and how to treat and prevent hypocalcemia. To discuss this important topic with us, we have Dr. Pedro Melendez, a clinical full professor at the City University of Hong Kong. Pedro, first, thank you so much for joining us. I'm sure that we'll have a very important discussion about these topics. But before we get into that discussion, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, thank you very much, Luis, for the invitation. Yes, I'm Pedro Melendez, a DBM from Chile in 1990. Then I moved to University of Florida to do a residency program in food animal, a master and a PhD. And then I became a faculty member there as assistant professor until I decided to go back to Chile. In 2008, I moved back to Chile for 7 years doing consulting mostly. And then I went back to the United States in 2015 at the University of Missouri, then University of Georgia, because there were more cattle involved, and then Texas Tech University. And finally, I decided to come to Asia Pacific. It's a very interesting project. A huge change in my professional career. Very interesting culturally, and I'm here right now as a full professor of the City University of Hong Kong. It's the only one faculty of veterinary medicine in the entire Hong Kong, and the only one accredited for the entire Asia Pacific by the Royal College and the Australasian College in Australia and New Zealand. So that is kind of overall my background.
So let's discuss a little bit about abdominal adiposity and tell us a little bit about some of the associations that exist between this issue and some of the diseases that may occur during the transition periods in dairy cows.
Okay, so let me start with a short story behind. This started in 2007, before going back to Chile. They used to call me for displacement of abomasos correction at the University of Florida. And the cow delivered in normal body condition score, but when I used to do the surgery, I found the omentum, a lot of fat. So I started to see a lot of cow with normal BCS, normal body condition, but a lot of fat inside, some cows, not all of them. So I realized, maybe there's something here new, like in humans, we have some people with a big belly because they have more abdominal adiposity. So I started to see this in cows. And then I repeated this in Chile. I started to see cows with normal body condition score and a lot of abdominal adiposity. And then they developed DAs. That was very consistent and very well related. So when I went back to the United States in 2015, I decided to do a study. And I did it in a slaughterhouse comparing cow with a lot of adiposity in the abdomen versus low. And I compared 100 cows. And then we got a sample from a muscular tissue from the neck, and we did the genomics, and we found 11 SNPs difference, a very big genetic difference between high abdominal adiposity and low abdominal adiposity. Later on, we repeat the study with Francisco Peña Garicano from your university. And we did another data set, another genomic data we have from the University of Florida and from North Florida Holstein. And we found the same. We found different regions of the genome, difference between higher deposit and lower deposit. But at the same time, we found more likelihood of displacement of abomasum and genes, pleiotropic genes, the same genes affecting both a deposit and displacement of the abomasum at the same time. So we found adiposity is related with DA, and that was answering me the question 10 years earlier when I was doing this surgery. So I started to study this. In the end, abdominal adiposity is like in humans, when it's too much adiposity and if you don't treat the animal well, if the animal is stressed and then the animal start to do lipolysis, of course the fat is inflamed, severely inflamed, the animal start to develop metritis, mastitis, and related with other metabolic diseases, ketosis, fatty liver. But in the end, we have some genetic component that I think is important to take into account.
Absolutely. And obviously, as you describe, I think that basically, if you have cows under those conditions, you're going to trigger a chain reaction, right? DAs, as well as all those other diseases. But I really like this concept that you mentioned about understanding the genetic component about that. Is this something that you think we'll be able to select cows for in the future?
Definitely, yes. I think if we start to consider this information in future genetic index related with health, and then considering these metabolic traits like abdominal adiposity, I think it is going to help a lot. At the same time, and I'm presenting some abstract for the Dairy Science meeting this coming June, for a large data set from Chile, like a 300,000 lactation, and then watching animal with the high BHB, ketosis, and again, we determined heritability, and we found 0.3, which is a high number for heritability, which is consistent with what I found previously. So heritability for ketosis is also medium, moderate, high. So it's something we have to consider for the future genetic index. So these metabolic diseases are becoming more and more related with the genome. Because we're selecting for milk production indirectly, we're bringing these genes that are associated with these metabolic disorders.
Absolutely. No, I'm really looking forward into seeing your abstract during ADSA. And certainly, this will be great to start considering for genetic programs. So if you change gears a little bit and move towards hypocalcemia, obviously is another issue that it's out there for many, many years. And some hearts continue to struggle with that. Obviously, it's not something that is that easy to face as well as prevent. But tell us a little bit about anionic diets and why it's so important to measure urine pH when you are implementing this technology.
Yes, so hypocalcemia is another very important metabolic disease in which I'm pretty sure there's a genetic component also related with the milk production. The more milk production, the more calcium you bring to the mammary gland. And in the end, if you see the incidence, we have controlled the clinical hypocalcemia very well, but still the incidence of subclinical hypocalcemia is still high, especially with the new classification by McCarr, you know, the transient and then delayed and then permanent hypocalcemia. Those are very interesting topics today. But for the clinical, we have some tools like an ionic salt or low calcium diets, both methodologies. I prefer the an ionic salts in my personal opinion as a consultant because they work well for me when you use this product properly. When I say properly, is try to target a moderate urine pH because unfortunately I have seen some line of research and some consultant pushing for lower pHs below 5.5 or 5.6, which to me and others like me, like Jesse Goff, who was one of my mentors in my master and PhD program, we considered that it's not necessary to go too low in the urine pH. With moderate urine pH, we can control the problem. Even between 6.3 and 6.8 is sufficient, and especially in adult cow, because second and third lactation, sometimes even close to 7, we can control the hypocalcemia, clinical hypocalcemia issue. So being consistent and moderate between 6.2 and 6.8, you have to measure this in a weekly basis, because unfortunately you mix improperly, you can go either too high or too low, and both extremes are bad. That's why I recommend to go once a week in a 10% of the cow to measure the urine pH and try to target this range of pH.
Adisseo, a global leader in nutritional solutions and the provider of SmartAmine M. Visit milkpay.com to calculate your return on investment when you balance your feed with amino acids, and to learn how SmartAmine M is the product for dairy producers who want to optimize milk production, component levels, and the lifetime performance of their herds.
And another topic that has been discussed a lot here in the U.S. related to calcium is the use of calcium bolus, especially early postpartum. What is your experience with that? What can you tell you to better implement this technology?
Yes. So again, hypocalcemia is a very interesting disease because the higher the lactation, the more likelihood of hypocalcemia. And sometimes even with an ionic salt, still a cow with lactation 4, 5 or higher, they are subclinical hypocalcemic, okay? And they can even be close to do like a milk fever regardless of the prevention. So in that case, in that particular case, older animals, 4 or more lactation, it's been demonstrated that by providing a bolus of calcium, a parturition may help to complement the anionic salt program. So what we recommend, an anionic salt program targeting a moderate urine pH, and then older cows, 4 or more lactation, provide either 1 or 2 boluses. Now Jessica is promoting giving the bolus at day 2 or 3 instead of 1. So we are working in that area now, what is the best strategy. But the bolus in the end complement the anionic salt program for this particular older cows and help to make a better performance in lactation.
Well, a lot of great tips and the episode today. Pedro, thank you so much for joining us. I'm sure people will truly appreciate all this advice. Thank you at home for joining us, and I hope to see you soon.
Thank you very much, Luis.